Okay, as I mentioned in the sermonette, and as the in accordance with the sermonette that I gave today, I want to address a seasonal matter. We are in the spring of the year, and the Bible talks about the spring of the year and the beginning of months. I have a longtime employee who's not working at a real job anymore, but he comes to our house from time to time and helps us do things around the yard. His name is Sheldon. And Sheldon has clandestinely been for years reading the Bible. He doesn't have anything to do with any church or religious group, but he's been clandestine. I know that because we had a computer program on my computer in the office where he was keeping the inventory control. And when he didn't think anybody was looking or observing him, I'd walk by and there'd be the pop program up, and he's sitting there reading it. And so I never said, "Hey, you're supposed to be working," or anything like that. I just let him continue to read the Bible program. And he's learned, it's amazing, he's learned quite a lot by reading the Bible. And I've been down to pick him up just south of Lawrenceville several times, or take him home. And he's willing to discuss it a little bit now. And he started one day by saying, I'm looking at the calendar. I don't think they got the holy days right on the calendar." So we discussed. He wasn't aware of the fact that the Bible and the holy days of God revolve around a lunar calendar. He was trying to start from the spring equinox, March 20th, and then calculate those holy days, you know, the Passover day on the 14th day after March 20th. But he had, you know, located the holy days. He knew that a certain number of days were involved. He just didn't know where the beginning was, and he wasn't aware of the fact that the biblical calendar revolved around the moon. So anyway, it was interesting. We're in the spring of the year, and this is a time when we have the beginning of months, and talking about the garden and so forth. Now, we've got just one day left to take action. And there's some action I want to talk about that hopefully you can take just by being aware of some of the things that Christ has done for us. And that's the action almost that I'm admonishing you to do today, is to be aware of certain things that Christ has done for us. I've entitled the sermon, Three Kinds of Sin. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 15. All familiar with that scripture. 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. Even the first day you shall put away leaven out of your houses. Whosoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. Symbolism, we all know the symbolism. Leaven is sin. 1 Corinthians chapter, Mr. Kessler mentioned you might hear more of that in the next week. Well, you're going to hear a little bit of it today. A little bit more of it today. 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 8. Identifies the symbolism behind leaven and the symbolism behind unleavened. Leaven standing for malice and wickedness, or in general sin and pride. Unleavened standing for humility and obedience. Pride and disobedience go together, don't they? If you're proud, you don't feel that you need to obey God. If you're humble, you let God tell you what to do. And so there's that kind of connection between leaven, which puffs up, indicates being proud, and being unleavened, which means without pride and having humility. And as it was already mentioned, by Monday, April 14th, 7:45 p.m., as close as I could tell here in this area, without really looking up the sun chart, it looked like it was just about 7:45. But you'll all have to have it done before then, because about that time you'll be at Moretti's. All of the leaven should be out of our houses, and we will be there. While that night is going on, we'll have the lunar eclipse. And Hazel had this up on the computer this morning. And it says it's a blood moon. A blood moon. Now, I've heard the expression blood moon a lot. I didn't really know what it meant. I just assumed it was really orange moon. But no, according to what she had on the screen, the blood moon is the moon when you have a full lunar eclipse. I started trying to write a message to the people in Eastern Europe about that. Then I looked on the charts, and it's going to happen 9:33 in the morning for them. It'll be full daylight, so they won't have the advantage of seeing what we can see if we're sacrificial enough to stay up that late and watch it. But we're going to have that kind of lunar eclipse. Real message point that I'd like to be making here is time. Has to do with timing. Has to do with timing. When is it we're supposed to have the leavening out of our houses? 7:45, Monday night. What about our own personal leaven? This is something I've chafed under a bit in years gone by, because oftentimes we're talking about removing leaven during the days of unleavened bread, but the timing of the whole matter is such that if we're following the timing in our own spiritual lives, as the Bible instructs us to do in our physical lives, we should have gotten all of the leavening out of ourselves before 7:45 Monday night. Of course, we won't, will we? We never have. Neither has anybody else, and except for Christ himself. And so we're going to be striving to do it, and of course, we will not get it completely done. As I said, there are three kinds of personal leaven that are being considered in this sermon. Now, I just regress here for a minute and think back to years gone by. Dolores was mentioned in the announcements, and how it'd be nice to give her a call and communicate with her. She had told us the last time we visited her, it's been a couple of weeks now, that she would hope that she might be able to come to the Passover service. But Hazel's shaking her head no. But anyway, that's what she told us that she was hoping she would be able to do. But I think about her as I'm thinking about leaven, and the fact that I am supposed to have all of the leavening out of me by the days of unleavened bread. There was a time back in the days of YOU when I had a meeting, a YOU coordinators meeting, with some of the leaders in YOU in Binghamton and Corning churches, and we met around Waverly somewhere. I don't know where, I wouldn't be able to find the place now. But we went in and sat down. It was just a coffee shop, and I sat down in there, and then the waitress came to the table, and we'd been talking for a while, and she started taking orders, and I ordered coffee and a donut. Days of unleavened bread. And Dolores said, "You don't want a donut." What does she mean? I don't want a donut. Who is she to tell me I don't want a donut? And I go, what is she talking about? Oh, yeah. I don't want a donut. But sometimes that's the way sin can slip up on you. You shouldn't forget it. It's okay, I should have known to put the garbage out, but there, I hadn't really paid enough attention to it. I guess I could invoke against myself that statement Mr. Dukach Sr. made to Mr. Dukach Jr. Forgetfulness is just another form of disobedience. And I had been forgetful in that regard. So we can all have those kind of difficulties as we go through the days of unleavened bread. But our objective is to have all of the sin out of our lives before the night to be much observed. So let's, in this sermon, consider three kinds of sin and what we should do about them. Leviticus, I'm going to be talking here about Leviticus chapter 1 through 7. It's old Testament book. Now, what in the world could that have to do with anything that really means anything? It's a really old book. And to most people, the first six chapters are particularly mysterious because they talk about animal sacrifices. And what in the world could those, what could matter about those? Well, research is required in order to sort that out. I would submit to you that God didn't include this fairly significant section in the text of the Bible if it wasn't important for you and I. You know, he has one book there, and that's essentially what he has said to us. And he selected the things that were to him important to include in that book. And the things, you know, from many things he didn't put in there, he felt this was a lot more important than some of those other things. So I think we have to look at it and look at every section of the Bible in that perspective. I'm going to read to you from Zondervan's Home Study Bible about the book of Leviticus, and I think we can learn something from the name of the book. What does the name Leviticus mean? Here's what it says from Zondervan's Study Bible. Leviticus receives its name from the Septuagint, and it puts in parentheses, pre-Christian Greek translation of the Old Testament. This is a translated word, Leviticus, and it's even one which the translators of the Septuagint translation made up in order to describe this book, in order to distinguish this book. And it means relating to the Levites. However, its Hebrew title, Wayigra, Wayigra, is the first word in the Hebrew text of the book and means he called. God called. Or you might extend that a little bit to say to those whom God called. This book of Leviticus is written to those people whom God called. Now, who are they? They is you. You have been called by God, right? In Pogo used to say, I met the enemy and he is us. Well, in this case, the people who have been called are you, because the people of the Old Testament, they weren't really called, were they? They were given these rules, but they were physical rules for physical people. It wasn't going to benefit them at all in the long run, but really they had spiritual applications which are for you and I today. Mr. Jackson, could you please start to disseminate the literature that I gave you? The first order of business to those who are called are five sacrificial offerings. Five main offerings. Now, Jackson's going to hand you out, and Mason is doing it too. He said he wasn't going to, but I guess he did. So good. Thank you, Mace. This is also from Zondervan's Bible. This is about the five offerings at the beginning of the book of Leviticus. Five animal sacrificial offerings. They fall into two categories. The offerings which are called the burnt offering, if you look at the page, the grain offering and the fellowship offering are the first three offerings. They are really, really quite different than the last two offerings, which are the sin offering and the guilt offering. The first three are called sweet savers. Sweet savers. Burnt offering, it says the meat offering in a lot of our translations, but it really means the meal or the grain offering. The second one is a meal or a grain offering, although it's called, in, I think in King James, meat offering. And so there's a little bit of changing the meaning of the words over time. And the third offering is fellowship offering. These three offerings, sweet savers, are called sweet savers because they were pleasant to God. As such, they were very acceptable before God, and they were to be made on the altar in the tabernacle. They were to be done on a regular, continuing basis for the nation as a whole. You'll find a schedule of these kind of offerings that were being done for the nation of Israel on a continuing basis, day after day, year after year, throughout the year. You'll find that schedule in Numbers 28, I believe it is. There was the possibility, though, for an individual who wanted to make a special sweet savor offering to God to bring his offering to the tabernacle. Not required, but if you wanted to make one of these special sweet savor offerings to God, you could bring it to the tabernacle and the priest would offer it on the altar the same as he did with the national one. That's about all I'm going to say about these three offerings because this sermon doesn't really deal with these three offerings. I thought I just need to give you a little bit of background there. And then move on because we're going to focus on the two other offerings, which are the sin offering and the guilt offering. I said we're going to have three different kinds of sin to look at and to think about. And we can acknowledge and understand, because understanding when we come to the Passover about what it is that Christ has done for us and understanding some of the, let me say, well, he sacrificed himself for our sin. But if we understand a little bit more about how he what kind of sins that he has sacrificed himself for, and that's what these offerings are about. They're about the fact that Christ was sacrificed for a sin offering and a guilt offering. Now, that's kind of a questionable thing. What's the difference between the sin offering and the guilt offering? We're going to be looking at that. But the first kind of sin that we're going to be talking about is what's called the sin offering. That's found in, described in the book of Leviticus, in Leviticus chapter 4. The sin offering, and you see here in Zondervan, it says it is a mandatory atonement for specific unintentional sin. Unintentional sin. Do any of us ever have unintended or unrecognized sins? Sins that we have committed, that we didn't know we were committing them, didn't intend to commit them, maybe didn't even know what God's requirements were. Go back, we mentioned earlier about the keeping the day of Pentecost. We kept it on the wrong day for, 1930s until 1975, probably. 40 years? 74. So, were we keeping God's law exactly as we should? It was, the definition of sin is to miss the mark. Well, we were missing the mark narrowly, maybe just by not quite understanding it, but we weren't getting it exactly right. And we made that correction, and so then we were keeping it on the correct day. But this offering that's being talked about here, this is an offering for unrecognized or unintended sins in your life. I know I'm confident I have lots of those that I don't even recognize now that are being done on being committed on an ongoing basis. I don't realize them. And so how can I really go to God and say, I'm asking you to forgive me for this sin, that sin, and just make a list of everything that I have done? We'd be keeping a huge scroll, wouldn't we? That we would be trying to sort out and remember. And I could go down lots of different examples. I thought, I go to Estonia, and I go to the grocery store, and I try to buy clean meat in the grocery store, but I see that sometimes the spoon that handles the ground pork gets put in the ground beef, and I might have gotten sometime a crumb of unclean meat there in that place. Not intending it, but how would I know? Unintentional sin. But still, it's a violation of God's law to the extent that I've done it. I'm not trying to focus in on all the men Anderson coming. Christ said we ought to, but he condemned the Pharisees because they were unbalanced in their approach and trying to root out all of the men Anderson coming to the neglection of the weightier matters of the law, which are judgment, mercy, and faith. But still, I have every confidence that I've probably eaten some unclean food here, there, or yonder, which I should not have. And that would have been a sin. And as I said, I even once ate some leavened bread during the days of unleavened bread. I didn't intend to do it, but I did. What about that? Is Christ's sacrifice going to cover that kind of a sin? If we look at it this way, I mean, there's so much frustration if we try to identify everything that we have done, which is a sin. We can't do it. Leviticus chapter 4 and verse 2. This is, again, this offering. Second verse where this offering is found, it starts in Leviticus chapter 4, verse 1. Speak to the children of Israel and say, if a soul sin through ignorance against any of the commandments of the Lord concerning things which ought not to be done and shall do against any of them. And it goes on to explain a lot of things. It starts with the priest. If the priest that is anointed sins according to the sin of the people, then let him bring for his sin, which he has sinned, a young bullock without blemish to the Lord for a sin offering. Well, it was expensive. It was a really large financial penalty for sin. And the priest had this responsibility. This sin, by the way, it's one that has gradations depending on this sin offering has gradations depending on the ability of a person to be able to bring a sacrifice for their sin. You know, and you'll see that in the piece of paper that I handed out to you under the sin offering. Number one, young bull for the high priest and the congregation. In other words, this sacrifice was made for the whole congregation. Now, you know, I guess we could say in regard to that, when the whole church wasn't keeping Pentecost on the right day, you know, maybe that would have been for an example of something where the whole congregation needed to have a sacrifice for it. Then it goes down, not for the high priest or for the whole congregation, but a leader. And for a leader, sacrifice was still, I guess for those people, fairly high requirement, a male goat. And then for a common person, a female goat or lamb. But then for a poor person, the only thing that was required would be a dove or a pigeon. And then finally, for the very poor, tenth of an ephah, I don't know exactly how much an ephah is, but it's, you know, a certain amount of fine flour, and that's what that person had to bring for the sacrifice for unintended sin. You know? And That's what that is. Now, what about you and I? Where would we fall in that category, in those categories, if we look at ourselves? Are we leaders? I would say God has chosen us to be leaders. And so maybe we would find ourselves in category number two. Well, what do we do? I mean, what did they do? And what does it mean to us? Dropping down to verse 11 and 12. Skin of the bullock, all of his flesh, with his head and his legs and his inwards and his dung, even the whole bullock, shall he carry forth. The priest had to kill the bullock and do some things, certain things with his blood and so on. But the whole bullock then was to be carried. It was not to be brought into the temple. The sweet savors were brought into either the temple or the tabernacle, originally the tabernacle, but then the temple was built. And with the sweet savors, those three first offerings were to be brought in and burned on the altar as pleasant to God. These two offerings, sin offering and the trespass offering, they were an offense to God. They were unclean offerings. the whole bullet shall he carry forth without the camp to a clean place where ashes are poured out, and burn him on the wood with fire. Where the ashes are poured out shall he be burned. So it wasn't, that was part of the laws of clean and unclean that they had in Israel. If you had leprosy, right there, I asked Dr. Clack, I said, what's that white spot on my arm? He said, pinch it. Do you feel that? I said, yeah, I feel it. It doesn't hurt, but I feel it. He said, that's good. He said, well, then it's not leprosy. I said, well, I'm glad to find that out. He said, if you didn't have any sensation there, I would say it's probably leprosy. But he says just loss of skin pigmentation otherwise. But in Israel, they had quarantine. The Bible is full of quarantining people for spiritual purposes and for physical purposes. And when somebody was quarantined, for those reasons, they were to be put out of the camp. This offering for sin, even though it's unintentional sin, had to be burned outside the camp. Hebrews chapter 13. Verses 11, 12, and 13. When this offering was truly, truly made, where was it made? What was the offering that was truly, truly made? It was Christ himself being offered. And you see from what was commanded here in the book of Leviticus about how and where this offering was to be made outside the camp of Israel, you see that Christ was offered outside the gate of Jerusalem. Hebrews chapter 13, the bodies of those beasts whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin are burned without the camp. Wherefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered without the gate. You see, his offering, his sacrifice, the real sacrifice, was done outside the gate of Jerusalem. And then, verse 13, Paul writes, let us go therefore unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach. So that offering had to be made outside the camp. So that's the first kind of sin, unrealized sins, and Christ's sacrifice is for those. Now, what I'm suggesting to you, when you come to the Passover and you are accepting and you're renewing your covenant with Christ for his sacrifice to cover your sins, realize that it's covering even those sins which you were not aware of, that God has made a provision so that you can be forgiven for those sins as well as for the sins for which you do know. Second kind of sin is in then the next offering. I lost it. There it is. Well, maybe it didn't exist anymore. Yeah, but it does. And that is called here in Zondervan the guilt offering. I would say it is incorrect when it says on the right-hand side, unintentional sin. Because you, as you read through here, you'll see these are not unintentional sins. These are sins that you knew and committed anyway. Leviticus chapter 6, verse 1. These were sins which we knew about or should have known about for sure. Leviticus chapter 6, verse 1. The Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, if a soul sin and commit a trespass against the Lord. This is kind of interesting too. Trespass against who? Against the Lord. And lie unto his neighbor. Who's the trespass against, first of all? God. Then secondly, against the person that you may have sinned against. Lie to his neighbor, and that which was delivered him to keep. See, this is not an unintentional sin at all. It's like, okay, something here which you were entrusted with to take care of, and let's say you got you were left a nice big bottle of wine to a very expensive wine to take care of, and neighbor said when he comes back he'll get it back from you. Please keep it for me while I'm gone, and you got tempted and you drank half of that bottle of wine, and your neighbor comes back and he said, this bottle tipped over when I wasn't looking and half of it spilled out. That's not unintentional, is it? It's an intentional sin. And lie to him in that which was delivered him to keep, or in fellowship, or in a thing taken away by violence. I thought about myself in this regard long ago, long, long ago. I was in about the sixth grade, went on a YMCA trip playing on athletic teams in YMCA competition. And there was another kid that was there. He was a nice kid, and he was pretty good as well. But several of us went on the bus to have our lunch, and I took part of his lunch away from him, and I ate it. I still think about that. I mean, it still bothers me that I did that. And what I ate was his Hershey bar. I took away from him and ate his Hershey bar. And that I just felt so dirty and evil while I was eating that Hershey bar, that I couldn't enjoy any part of it. But I ate it anyway. Thing taken away by violence, or has deceived his neighbor. These are all things that, you know, as Zondervan said, unintentional sin here. Well, this is not unintentional sin. This is talking about things that you did that you know you shouldn't have done. And these are more the kinds of sins that we will think about as we examine ourselves in relationship to the Passover. They're much easier to see. Or has found that which was lost and lied concerning it. I did that once too. I hadn't even thought about this until this minute. But I was in fifth grade. And I found somebody who had lost, I found a lost purse, just a little coin purse. And I opened it up. There was a nickel inside. So I took the nickel and I zipped the purse back up and I turned it in. Well, it was found out that there was money missing from that purse. And so they came back to me. And then my mother, who was teaching in the school, came after me, and I felt so guilty. And she said, why did you do that? Why did you take that? And I said, well, I wanted to buy a Coca-Cola. That's, Now that tells you how long ago it was. You could buy a Coca-Cola for 5 cents. And she said, I'll give you a nickel. Here's this nickel. You can buy a Coca-Cola with it. Never steal anything again. Which, of course, I did the next year with a chocolate bar. But that was, I knew better. You see, that's the point. These are for this trespass, or this trespass offering is for sins that you committed, that you knew about, and you shouldn't have done, and you knew when you did it, you shouldn't have done. Entirely different category of sin. Verse 5. All that about which he has sworn falsely, he shall even restore it in the principal and shall add the fifth part thereto, and to give it and give it to him to whom it is owed, appertaineth, in the day of his trespass offering. So if I want to repent, take a trespass offering to the priest so I can be forgiven. That's what we're doing, isn't it? That's what we'll be doing tomorrow night. We'll be coming before Christ, renewing the covenant that we've made. Then you've got to, first of all, take care of the person that you've offended, and it says, add the fifth part to it. Add 20%. Christ confirms that principle in Matthew chapter 5, verses 23 and 24. If you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember your brother has something against you, something legitimately against you that you should have taken care of, and you did not do. Leave your gift before the altar. Go your way. First be reconciled to your brother. Then come and offer your gift. I think about, at one point I gave sermons on each one of these five offerings. A sermon for an offering. So I gave five sermons covering the five offerings. And when I talked about this part of the trespass offering, the individual who was attending in Buffalo at the time, probably a few of you know him, Fritz Leipold. Leipold. I'm not sure. It might be like Holloway or Holiday. Holiday or Holloway. Lisa or Lori. You know, so many people mispronounced one or the other over the years. Our two daughters, Joe, Elijah, were named Lisa and Lori. And a few people said, why did you name them so much alike? That's a trespass offering I give to Hazel, of course. She named the girls. I was going to name the boys. But anyway, she had two chances. I only had one. If you bring your gift to the altar and remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift before the altar. Go your way. First be reconciled to your brother. Come and offer your gift. Leviticus chapter 6, verse 6. He shall bring his trespass offering unto the Lord. This is then the trespass offering that would have to be offered for the sin, the intentional sin that you had committed. You notice in the unintentional ones, there were gradations according to your ability to make a sacrifice, to afford the sacrifice. Here there's just one for all. If you've done this, you, no matter how poor you are, you got to bring this sacrifice. A ram without blemish, out of the flock, with your estimation for a trespass offering unto the priest. And the priest shall make an atonement for him before the Lord, and it shall be forgiven him for anything of all that he has done in trespassing therein. Without going into all of the scriptures, and of course you can read all of these scriptures, but I don't have time to cover all of these scriptures in this sermon. It's also to be an offering outside the camp. And so both the trespass and the sin offering were to be offered outside the camp. They were unclean things to God. And they were definitely not to go on the altar in the tabernacle or in the temple. Christ's sacrifice is for us also in these kinds of sins, but if and only if we have made restitution to our brother for what we have done. There is a segment in what we call the Lord's Prayer that we refer to this. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. That's another condition on this. The sacrifice is for us, but it says to the extent that we're willing forgivers of others, we will be forgiven. Unstated but clearly indicated contrast to that. If we don't forgive others, or if we begrudgingly forgive others, to whatever extent that is, we can expect the same kind of forgiveness ourselves. So when we go to keep the Passover, we need to think about this kind of sin and to understand. A big part of what I'm trying to do here is to get us to understand different categories of sins that we commit, which Christ's sacrifice is for. First one, unintended sin. Still, a sacrifice is required for that. Second kind is for intentional sins. And if it involves another person, then first of all, restitution must be made before we can expect that kind of forgiveness. I said I was going to give you three kinds of sins. Now, sin, here's the third kind. Can we commit a sin without transgressing God's law? God has law, right? And he sets forth this law pretty clearly, although there's a lot of nuances to understand it fully. Question is it possible that we can sin even though we did not transgress God's law? I don't know, you could make some things, maybe some connections between parts of God's law, but it would be remote. It would be remote connections to God's law. In some way, you would always say that it is a violation of God's law. Romans chapter 14, verse 22 and 23. Have you faith? Paul's question to the church in Rome. Do you have faith? Have it to yourself before God. Happy is he that does not condemn himself in that thing which he allows. Unless it's possible to condemn yourself in something that you do. He that doubts, he's talking now about vegetarianism and eating meat. He that doubts is damned if he eats In other words, it's a sin to somebody who eats, who believes it is wrong to eat meat. Is it wrong to eat meat? No. The Bible's pretty clear that it's appropriate to eat meat. No problem with doing it, unless, as Paul says, you believe it's a sin. If you believe it's a sin, even though it isn't, and you still eat it, it is to you because you have been willing to disobey God in that thing. Verse 23, he that doubts, doubtful in what you're doing, is damned if he eats, because he does not eat of faith. Whatsoever is not of faith is sin. Pretty short indication right there, isn't it? Anything that you believe is wrong, which you are willing to do anyway, even though you may believe it is wrong, and it's not, even though it's not wrong, if you believe that it is and you are willing to do it anyway, it is a sin. Whatsoever is not of faith, Paul says, is sin. Hebrews 11, verse 6. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. And he gives you a definition of faith here. He that comes to God must believe that he exists. That's only the starting place, isn't it, Satan does? He that comes to God must, and that's what we're doing tomorrow night. We're going to God. We have to do it in faith. And we have to know that if we have committed this kind of sin as well, we violated our own conscience in something, that is also covered with the sacrifice of Christ. He that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Who's 1 John chapter 3 and verse 4, whosoever commits sin transgresses the law, for sin is the transgression of the law. But this is a different kind of sin, isn't it? Even though you may not transgress the law, still, it could be a sin if you're not acting out of faith. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, we're looking at self-examination. Paul is saying here, and we've been doing this, and we're continuing to do it now for more intently than ever for the next 24, 36 hours. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 26, as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you do show the Lord's death till he comes. Wherefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup in an unworthy manner without understanding what the sacrifice of Christ was for and what it covers, without understanding without examining yourself, will be guilty of the body and blood. Not that you can be completely capable of understanding that. You see that there's a whole category of sacrifice which were for things that you didn't even know that you did. And I think it's a really encouraging thing that God has given us that explanation in Leviticus chapter 4 about unintentional sin and showing that the sacrifice of Christ covered unintentional sin as well as intentional sin, and then just breaking our faith as well. But let a man examine himself. You're not going to come out in your examination as being worthy, so don't expect that. But you are to examine yourself anyway. And so let him eat that bread and drink that cup. One of the purposes of examination, isn't it, is to identify our weaknesses. And if we identify our weaknesses, then maybe we'll get a little stronger in the time ahead. He that eats and drinks unworthily eats and drinks damnation to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. For this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many have died. If we would judge ourselves, he says, we should not be judged. So let's examine ourselves for these three kinds of sin and come to the Passover, knowing that Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us and covers these things. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump as you are unleavened, even Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. Those three kinds of sin, unrecognized sin, sins which we do recognize and know and acknowledge, and sins which technically don't transgress God's law, but are done in violation of what we believe. Sins of faith, we might say. And I wouldn't say these three kinds of sin are an exhaustive listing of sin. They aren't. In fact, I gave the sermonette with a fourth kind of sin: to him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. So there are other kinds of sin. And I'm not trying to say I've given you an exhaustive listing of every kind of sin, but I think these are three important categories when we go to keep the Passover, that we realize Christ was put to death so that we could be forgiven from. 1 Corinthians, and let's say the timing is to do this, is we're supposed to have all of the leavening out before the night to be much observed. So that's the timing. 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 8, let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Let's focus during the days of unleavened bread, then, on what it means to be unleavened.